This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
So much excitement in the city of Seattle about the Mariners headed to the postseason for the first time since 2001, and a man who knew it was going to happen. In fact, he predicted they might win the division this year. So this is not a surprise at all to the man who's sitting on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook hotline right now. Our NHL and Major League Baseball insider, John Morosi, is here. How are you, man?
Gentlemen, this is the evening, the eve of what we've been waiting for a long time, and obviously 21 years for Mariners fans, and certainly for all of us who follow this team this season. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool to see game one tomorrow, and just thinking about the Mariners with the playoff bunting along the grandstands there in Toronto, Rogers Center. It's going to be a great atmosphere, and Luis Castillo on the mound. I mean, I feel like tomorrow's Christmas morning, guys. This is fun. I love it.
Yeah, I was asking Bob, like, you know, what do you, and we both agreed. Obviously, you can't do this because you're working the game. But for big games like this, like the Super Bowl, for instance, like, I just want to be home, no distractions, nobody else. I just want to sit and be able to watch this thing all the way through. And I'm sure a lot of Mariner fans feel that way. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say my advice to everybody is wherever you are, and if you've got one around the house, or if you can make a run to your local sporting goods store, get a good scorebook and keep score on this one. And you've been waiting 21 years for this. I want to have a score. I'm going to do that. So I'll be this weekend. I'm going to be sort of following all the series from home, and then Sunday I fly to Houston to do that series. So obviously I'll see the Mariners if they prevail this weekend. And so I'm going to make sure that game one tomorrow. I don't always score games that I'm not physically at, but I'm going to score that one tomorrow on my own sheet, because it's special. I mean, we've been talking about how close they are and how close they've come so many times, and now they're finally there. So I think it's just going to be a tremendous atmosphere. I believe this is the best of the four wild card series this weekend in Major League Baseball, regardless of what time it's on, what network. I'm not worried about that. To me, this is the best series because of all that's at stake for Toronto and for that organization. Remember, they didn't play a home game for a year and a half. And so that's, to have playoff baseball back there is also very special. Their first home game since 2016. And I think for the Mariners, the subplot is there. We all know it, how long it's been. So it's just going to be a very cathartic and special day. And I'm going to keep score.
Well, John, we always, you know, nobody's more familiar with the old adage of, you know, pitching and defense wins titles than you. Do you believe that to be true in this particular series, though, because the Mariners' most consistent elements have been their pitching and their defense throughout the season, whereas you look at the Blue Jays and they are amongst the best offensive teams in all of baseball. You know, depending on every category you want to look at, they're in the top five. So it looks like a classic, you know, strength of pitching versus the strength of their hitting. What's going to win out here? How do you see it?
You're right on, Bob. It's strength on strength, to borrow an expression frequently used in Dave's favorite sport there. But that's what it is. It is strength on strength. And Scott Servais said that today when he was speaking with the media in Toronto about how that is their strong part of their team, is their bullpen in particular. So that's where I really think, and I watch this Jays team pretty closely too, this matchup tomorrow in game one for Seattle, you know, forever, I've been saying about the Jays, their worst nightmare is a power righty with stuff that's going to pair up against them in a playoff series because of how right-handed their lineup is. I really believe the Mariners have an excellent chance to win game one. And it has a lot to do with the guy on the mound and, of course, who he's backed up with that bullpen. And this is exactly the worst nightmare of the Blue Jays, which is a righty who can really, when he's on, dominate you with multiple pitches. And this is why the Mariners got Castillo. This is why at the trade deadline, I said a lot that the Jays needed to get one more lefty bat, and they didn't, like a big lefty bat. And so for me, I look at this and say there are a lot of reasons, if I'm a Mariner fan, to be really confident in game one. For some of the same reasons, it's not an ideal matchup for Robbie Ray in game two, because it's going to be a lefty who I promise will be facing almost all righties. It's not going to be a great matchup for Robbie Ray. But I really think the Mariners, because of who they've got in game one, they've got a real chance in the series. And because especially, you know, the bullpen, the Mariners had to play, they had to play meaningful games until very late in the season. And so when you have to do that, you end up using a lot of your bullpen guys a lot late. And I think that rest, I think the ability to kind of know where you were seated the last couple of days and today's off day is really big for the Mariners. I think it's crucial to get rejuvenated. Obviously, we know it's not ideal to be without Haggerty, in particular because of how important Haggerty has been to this team this season. I think that it's a bigger loss than what people probably realize nationally. We've talked about Haggerty a lot, and I think not having him is a significant issue for the Mariners, but that just means they're going to have to really maybe pick up the production elsewhere, score in different ways, but they can certainly do it. I really believe the Mariners have a legitimate chance to win the series.
Well, and you just brought up something I wanted to follow up on. We were trying to figure out what Scott meant. He made a comment earlier about, yeah, obviously Luis Castillo is going to go in game one, Robbie Ray in game two, but that could change depending on what happens in game one. So we were talking about, all right, well, what would change who his starter would be the next day? And my first thought was, all right, well, if he sees a right-handed heavy lineup in Toronto and they somehow get dominated by Castillo, is he going to then change his mind and say, I'm going to double up on this and go another power righty and put Gilbert in there? Because we're trying to figure out what he meant by, you know, that could change depending on the outcome of game one. What do you think that means when he says that?
I'm right there with you. And I thought that was probably the most interesting thing that he said today. I mean, you know, let's think about this and why. I guess I'll make the big point and say this, and from having covered a lot of postseasons, and whether it's Clayton Kershaw getting taken out of a game here and there, whether it's the Dodgers not letting Kenley Jansen close games in the World Series, there is zero room for sentimentality. Sentimentality is like if you're trying to drive east and you've gotten all the way to New York City, it's like the Snoqualmie Pass. They're like, sentimentality is way back there. We are like the opposite side of the country from sentimentality right now. You have got to just go with who's best. And I realize Robbie Ray's got a big contract. I realize he's the reigning Cy Young Award winner. But this is your first shot at the playoffs in two decades. And if you look at the game on Friday and you look at the swings that Vladdy takes and that Bo takes and Teoscar Hernandez, and if you go up and down that lineup and you say, my goodness, what I'm seeing right now tells me that George Kirby or Logan Gilbert's going to be the guy, then you really have to give serious thought to making that move for game two. The other thing I would say, and this is where you can get creative here, if you start with Ray in game two, and it's also kind of not necessarily fair to him because you're going to say, listen, you got a really short leash, and at the first sign of trouble, I'm rushing Gilbert into the game or I'm rushing Kirby into the game. I don't know if that's really fair to anybody. I if I'm Scott, I would be decisive. If I really think that Kirby or Gilbert is my guy for game two, do it. Make the choice. And I think he will. He's an excellent manager. We've talked about what a great job he's done with this club. But I think that if – and there has to be, just based on the way he answered that question, guys, there has to be some legitimate discussion going on right now in that coach's office. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall there about, okay, what do we got to do? If it comes down to our season and jobs and championships are on the line, who do you want to give the ball to? I think you got to trust your gut. And Scott Service has been right way more often than he's been wrong this season. So I think I'm right there with you. I think that is a really interesting point, and I heard the same thing listening to what he was saying today.
Hey, JP, we were doing who could be an X factor, maybe somebody, and, you know, not chalk, obviously, sort of an unknown that might step up based on what you've seen. I think I picked JP Crawford, and Bob went with Jared Kelnick. What do you think?
I do think Kelnick is the interesting guy here because he's been waiting so long for this opportunity, and there's been the ups and the downs, and yet you look at the way that he's played the last few weeks, and when you think about the injuries to Winker and Haggerty, the chance is right there. And we're about to find out if he's really made some changes in his approach. We're about to find out if he is who I've always believed he is, which is like a big-time, big-moment player. And he had a good September last year. He's come back and shown some signs of life. Kelnick, for me, is the kind of guy where, especially in that ballpark, if Toronto makes – if Toronto makes some mistakes early on, we could see him making some significant damage there, whether it's in a hitter-friendly ballpark. I think Kelnick is the guy where you make the wrong pitch to him at the wrong time, he can really hurt you. I'm there and saying that I think Kelnick has the potential to be a huge difference maker for the Mariners here in this series.
You're not voting on Manager of the Year this year, right?
I am not. No, I am not voting Manager of the Year. I am voting MVP, which I turned in dutifully earlier today after considerable reflection. And I will, when the vote comes out, I will tell you everything I feel about that MVP vote. But I in the meantime, on the Manager of the Year, I'll say this. And I don't want to break your heart again, Bob. I really don't. But it's Terry Francona. He got, to me, he got that team, the youngest team in the major leagues, to a division championship when he probably had the third most talented roster in the division. And there is a great case for service. There's a great case for Brandon Hyde in Baltimore. And if any three of them won it, I'd be thrilled. But I really think you have to look at Cleveland and say the job that Tito did was probably one of the best jobs he has ever done. When you consider their payroll relative to the White Sox, the talent gap. So, Bob, I'm sorry. I don't know if I would say that I have Scott. I'll say this. I would go Tito number one, Service number two, Hyde number three. So Scott Service is no longer the last of the top three, okay? the worst, as you called it, the worst of the top three. He is no longer there for me. He is a solid number two, a close number two, and I'd be thrilled if he actually ends up winning it, because I think he also deserves it just like Tito does.
Yeah, you may be surprised by this, but I don't disagree with you on this year's vote, because I think, what did Tito have, 15 players that made their debut this year or something? I mean,
unreal.
Unreal. So I don't disagree. I actually think Scott had a better case last year because of what happened to the rotation right out of the gate, because of what their offense was not last year, and for them to win 90 games and everything that went on. I just thought that was amazing. I thought he absolutely deserved it last year. This year, I get it. So I'm not as down on your vote this year. I'm with you. Last year, you broke my heart.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But hey, he got the Mariners to the dance now. That's the important thing. And I'm thrilled. And it's going to be an amazing run for a lot of different reasons. I think too, the unique story here of, and I want to make sure I mention him before we wrap anything up, is Cade Marlowe. So Cade Marlowe, according to what Ryan Dimmich's reporting has been, and based on what Jerry DePoto was saying, he might make the roster. And here's a young man who had not played above Double A until the season began and has never played in the major leagues. So Cade Marlowe, his numbers there in the minor leagues this year have been really good. He's stolen 30-plus bases. He's hit 20-plus homers. He's a versatile, can play all three positions outfielder. And it sounds like, based on the injuries and where they're at, that Cade Marlowe might be on this team, which when you think about it, the three-game series allows you to be a little more imaginative with your roster. So, for example, because Marco pitched yesterday, he's probably not going to be on the roster here for the weekend. So you got one extra position player to play with, and it's going to be a young man in Cade Marlowe who's 25 years old and could make his major league debut in the postseason, which has happened a couple different times. It's not totally unforeseen, and it actually happened last year for the Braves with some of their young pitchers who came up and actually debuted in the postseason. So it can happen. It's pretty darn rare. And, yes, Cade Marlowe, a 20th-round pick. I mean, what a story. And you know it, and you just know. Like, at some point, wouldn't it be just crazy if, like, all of a sudden it's, like, bottom of the ninth inning and here he comes. He's got a pinch hit. They need a lefty and he's going to pinch hit. I mean, that's what playoff baseball does for you. And it's just so great to be able to see the Mariners doing this again after all these years.
Yeah, we cannot wait for the game tomorrow. Hopefully they can get through this series. And before we let you go, if they do get through it and they face Houston, are you going to be coming out to Seattle for one of those games?
That is the plan. So my plan overall is I'm on the ALDS and ALCS, the ALDS that begins in Houston. So basically what I'm saying is for the entirety of the American League playoffs, if the Mariners prevail this weekend, I will be on the Mariner beat every day, every game. So that means that we're going to have a lot of opportunities to get together. I'm going to see if I can maybe even find a way to get to a Kraken morning skate at some point if I've got time while I'm there. So, no, I am so excited, and if I'm able to get over there, I'll know that our year has arrived at a very special spot. So I'm just I'm thrilled to be with you guys again tonight, and hopefully I'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, that would be amazing, having the Mariners move on to the next round, but more importantly, having John Morosi in town.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
You guys are the greatest, man. I promise I'm coming up there sooner rather than later, one way or the other, but let's hope it's next week, and let's hope we're able to really enjoy the pretty special moments. I want to hear that anthem at T-Mobile here at some point in time soon.
Absolutely. John, safe travels out there, my friend. We'll talk next week.
All the best, guys. Thanks for everything. Really appreciate it.
There you go. There's John Morosi. Our weekly conversations with our MLB and NHL insider, John Morosi, is presented by Stanford's Restaurant. And I love that he's already playing around morning skates for the Kraken. I love it. Love that guy.
Take Lefko with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in town. I'm in here for the ALDS. But what time's morning skate? Okay.
Morning skate. Hilarious. I like that you're not going to let him go as far as last year's.
Last year was a travesty. I'm sorry. To me, that was hands down, open and shut, easy decision. This year, I get it because I was reading an article. I can't even remember if it was MLB.com or something about the job that Francona did with the Guardians this year, and that I think the number was 15. Somebody that maybe follows the team will correct me, but I think they had like 15 different players make their debut this year, like an incredibly young team. So
Stephen Kwan being one of those guys, right?
Heck of a player, man.
Goodness, like Oregon State kid.
I like what he brings to the table, but yeah, so. If he wins it, am I going to go, oh, he got robbed again? No. I mean, if Scott Service wins it, he deserves it. Francona deserves it. But last year, I just felt, considering what was expected of the team, what he had to work with, and what they ultimately achieved, how did you not vote for him? I mean, I know they didn't make the postseason, but the Astros were expected to win. The Tampa Bay Rays were coming off an appearance in the World Series. They were expected to be good. The Mariners were not expected to be even a winning team, much less a 90-win team.
Hey, do you know Lefko's JP in, is he in Toronto? Is that what he was?
Oh, no, he actually told me he's at his daughter's field hockey game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was all the commotion behind him.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I just saw him on TV the other day. He's down in Texas where Aaron Judge hit his 60-second home run. I don't know if he was, like, on the trail the whole way or whatever.
Just going to follow him until he hit it?
Yeah, but, I mean, that guy is amazingly busy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not going to get any less for him because he's coming out here to go to morning skate with the Kraken. We hope he is anyway.
Well, yeah,
over the place.
Yeah, whenever the season ends, period, then he moves on to hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, he's year round, man. Love that guy.
Incredible.
I hope, in all honesty, I do hope, you know, obviously for the Mariners, I mean, for them to win a series, oh my goodness, this town will explode. But to have that and to have him in town, how much we got to have him in studio? I mean, we got to hang out with that guy. We got to be friends.
He's such a nice guy, man. He came in the studio. I think you were on vacation or something last year. It was during the holidays, but he came in and visited us. And he went to. Did you go to a game with him, Mike? A Kraken game?
Yeah,
yeah, he did. That's when I had the whole vertigo thing going on.
That's right.
I was at home.
Oh, I thought you were just slacking.
No.
Yeah.
No, I was riding it out at home. I was doing the shows from home, man.
You were on a roller coaster ride, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're just the nicest guy in the world. But, man, he's working his tail off. And there's lots of people that would love to have his life, right? I mean, it's hard work and it's a grind. It's lots of travel and things like that. But, you know, being around sports and, you know, interviewing Aaron Judge after he just does something that's historic in Major League Baseball, pretty amazing.
People are mad at him. And people are mad at him on the text about his vote. He doesn't have a vote this year, by the way. That's just his opinion on Manager of the Year. So that's why he was able. Last year, he couldn't share it with us until after it was announced.
Well, I like that he goes ahead and does it. He put himself in harm's way. He could have just said, oh, yeah, I'd go for service.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's a very principled man. He's not going to tell you a lie just to make you feel better.
425, John Paul, you're dead to me.
Stop it. Stop.
509 says, boo, it's not Tony, it's service. And then let's see, the 360. Now this isn't loading. Oh, there it is. Believe it when people tell you there's an East Coast bias. As long as Seattle's in Southeast Alaska, they are going to be penalized for it.
No, no. He picked the Mariners to win the division. And he was the only one, I think, that we heard from anyway. That because there were some that thought that they would make the wild card. But nobody thought that they would have a better record than Houston.
Yeah, and he would. I mean, unfortunately, he was wrong. The division. I would love for that to have been the case, where Mariners are sitting here wondering who their opponent's going to be and watching them fight it out. Mm-hmm. How great would that have been? But you know, that's coming. That's the next step. We've got step one out of the way. You got to the postseason. Hopefully, they win the series. We'll see what happens. But yeah, next year, not to get past what's going on now, but the expectations continue to grow. That's the beauty of it. Is now this is what we hope will be the norm. We'll be talking about, all right, next year when they get to the playoffs, not right. If, but when they get to the playoffs next year, here's what they need to do differently, or here's how I could see them, you know, changing what didn't work this year.
How awesome would that be to have the bye? Because I just remember that with the Seahawks in 2005. It was like, you're at home, you get a week off, and you win two home games, and you're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, so and obviously they play more games, but, you know, just sitting home waiting, you got to go on the road for the minority of the games and bring your fans all that joy and excitement and everything. This place would go nuts.
Oh, I just want to be in that building. I want to be in T-Mobile for a playoff game and just experience the volume and intensity and just the passion out there. There's no other feeling like that. It's amazing. All right. Again, our conversations with John Morosi, presented by Stanford's Restaurant. Coming up, Seahawks tight end Colby Parkinson will join us live to talk about the offense and the game coming up against the Saints. That's coming up next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It is Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports Station on 710. Colby Parkinson is set to join us. Apparently they are wrapping up meetings as we speak, so he'll wander in here at some point. Big dude. That's a big target out there, and you gave the numbers to start the show, just combined numbers to tight ends, and there's been two incompletions through four games.
Yeah, and Disley's 12 for 12, and like I said before, Parkinson and Fant are really slacking. Each has
dropped
a pass. What the heck? You're 6 for 7, but he has the highest average, 19 yards. So 115 total for him, one touchdown to Fant. We saw the other day the two-yard throw, and then three for Big Will. Man, I love it. And I think, you know, it's not like Geno is checking down or taking the easy throw. It's just the tight ends have been open. Mm-hmm. And I love their play-action pass and I swear that Geno wasn't great at throwing on the run last year, but I could be wrong. I just thought that was something where I didn't think he was very good. Now I think he's excellent. You know, he roll out on that boot, the fake, the play action, and then he's got tight ends dragging across, and then there's always a deep guy, you know, Tyler Lockett. And there's a few times where I thought he might throw it to Tyler. He might, you know, go ahead and take a shot on the deep crosser, and instead he just, you know, throws it to either the shallow or the intermediate. And picking up big yardage. You know, there was a great play where Parkinson caught a pass, and then the second-level guy was Fant, mm-hmm. and Fant's defender was behind him, so he just kind of slowed down and butt-blocked him, basically.
Is that an official term?
Yeah, butt-block.
Butt-block.
Yeah, so he just slowed down and kind of got in his way, and so Parkinson was able to get up the sideline. So guys working really well together. And, yeah, like I said, I think there was a 15-yard completion, 12 or 15, that got called back for Fant. So, yeah, it's I love everything that we're seeing from the tight ends.
Yeah.
And, by the way, Parkinson, not built to be a blocker, but he's a willing blocker.
You have his measurables. Are you supposed to be here any second? Apparently, yeah. They're walking over. But what is he like? Is he 6'7"?
Yeah, I think so. We'll see when he gets here. He's probably going to look.
We'll have you stand back to back with him.
Yeah, that'll be good. Radio.
That'll be a good look. He'll be like, what did I just walk into? Stand back to back.
Bunch of amateurs in here.
Yeah,
in third grade? He's 6'7", 250.
Yeah. I mean, what a if you're a quarterback, don't you just absolutely love that target?
I remember talking to Warren Moon about that, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's always a better feeling throwing to a big receiver. We were talking about Mike Williams, I think, at that point, but always better. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't just love Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett. Those guys just get so open, yeah. Always open.
Tyler's so, always open, man.
That's what Rabel says during the broadcast. What is he, Dave? He's open. He's always open.
We've been saying that for years. We asked him how it happens. He doesn't know.
No, he doesn't. And he's just always able to find the dead spot in the zone. So, yeah, Speaking of, there we go.
Here's a guy. He's open right now. Look at him.
Hey, Colby.
How are you?
He is 6'7". There's no question about that, man.
Yep. Yeah, go for those right there. We were just singing your praises here a moment ago before you walked in. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you guys in person.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. By the way, I asked Dave this earlier. You guys never talk about a Stanford connection, huh?
Every now and then. I feel like we've mentioned it.
Yeah, maybe. It was just hard when you came in. It was the pandemic, and so everything was from home.
Right.
Where'd you live your freshman year?
I was in, Jaro, Junipero Serra.
Oh, Junipero Serra.
In Wilbur, Wilbur Hall.
Okay.
Yeah. Were there any?
I was Branner.
Branner, okay.
Branner Hall.
Yeah. Did you see any monuments or plaques with Dave's face or name?
He's actually
there?
All over campus. So, yeah. I immediately knew who he was.
No.
Well, we were just talking about Dave and I have been screaming for years about how about getting the tight ends involved? Mm-hmm. How about more attention to the tight ends? And they'd made moves, you know, bringing in. You can go back to Jimmy Graham. You could look at Everett last year or Greg Olson. Like they wanted the tight ends to be a big part of this, and for whatever reason, just never seemed to be a focus. But so far this year, feels like maybe that's changing. Do you get that sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you have a group like we have with all three of us that can do a lot of different things, it presents a lot of challenges for the defense. So when we're out there getting the ball, spreading it around, it opens up a lot of things in both the run and pass game.
Lots of three tight end sets.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I wanted to point out, and I'm sure you noticed it, but your buddy Noah had what we called a butt block.
Yeah.
Where he slowed down and got the guy.
Yeah, for me.
And you got up the up the field there, but got some speed, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was talking about blocking, and I don't know how much you did of that at Stanford and everything, but you know the thing they always say about it is, you know, big body obviously helps, but willingness.
Yep.
And you're a willing blocker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that something you've worked hard on?
Yeah, at Stanford I didn't do it too much. I was more of a pass catcher, but coming into the league, obviously want to get on the field any way possible, help out the team. So I took a lot of pride in getting better at that, and I think I've made myself known to be someone that can be trusted in the run game as well.
Are you guys aware of your catch to target ratio?
Sure, it's got to be pretty high. I'm not sure what it is.
You're 28 for 30.
There we go.
Two. And I was saying Disley's 12 for 12, and you guys are slacking, you know, 6 for 7. And, but no, in the touchdown, the throw from Geno, the touchdown that you had, I thought maybe that was his best throw that he's made. He kind of led you away a little bit from coverage. But what can you say about Geno, man? Maybe you saw this coming.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of Seahawks fans, it's a pretty big surprise, but he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I wasn't taken too off guard by it. I kind of expected this out of him. When he came in last year for Russ, when Russ hurt his hand, he played great. We definitely could have won those couple games that he was in, and some things didn't go our way. But from practice and those games, I've seen him been playing the same way that he is now.
Yeah.
He's not doing anything that's out of the norm for him. He's playing great, and we'll continue to expect him to do so.
Does anything change for you with a different quarterback? I mean, you know, Russ obviously was a guy that would scramble to keep the play alive. So I'd imagine as a receiver, you're running around just trying to get open. Geno's different. They're just mechanically different. So does it alter how you approach a game or how you run your routes?
That's kind of the only way it changes, honestly, is that with the scramble effect. Russ was trying to make the big play, and, you know, it was great. And he made a lot of amazing plays doing mm-hmm. that. And Geno sits in there a little bit more. So more of a progression with Geno, but both are great and obviously present different opportunities for us as receivers.
What's the tight end room like now? Is Tyler Mabry still here?
Yep.
Yeah, he's on the practice squad, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's a pretty good group of guys. You guys hang out? Are you tight?
Yeah, it's a great group. Really young group, too. I mean, Will's the oldest guy, and I think he's 25.
Yeah.
and we have a great time. You know, Noah's been awesome, a great addition to the team, and It's really fun when we all get out there, especially when we all have a couple catches in a drive and then one of us scores. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I think there's twice that I've written down in my notes, tight end drive. Mm-hmm. It was like four or five. Yep. You know, another guy I wanted to ask you about was Rashad Penny and what you've seen in him, because we mentioned your blocking. And I was looking at the game the other day where he started off with a one-yard gain, no gain, no gain, one-yard gain. I mean, really hung in there and then just exploded. And it just seems like he's kind of a different player. Well, he's the same as he was at the end of last year.
Sure.
But, you know, really it must be cool to see that guy develop and block for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you never know when it's going to pop. So every play you're blocking as if it's going to be that, you know, 45, 50-yard run that he's shown to have in him. He's an exciting player, and obviously he showcased a lot of his stuff last week.
As far as you go, when you get into the offseason coming off of last year, do they give you any direction or, hey, we really want you to do this, or we want you to put on muscle, we want you to lose weight, we want you to work on your speed or your routes, or is there any sort of homework assignment from the team in order to get more involved in the offense?
Sure. You'll have your exit interviews with the coaches and whatnot, and with Pat, tight ends coach, you would give us some things to work on. And then in terms of speed and weight, it's always be as big as you can and as fast as you can.
Oh, so they want you to be.
If you're faster at a heavier weight, do that. If you're faster at a slower weight, do that. Just be stronger and be faster. And that's what I did this offseason. You know, gained a lot of weight. I was got up to about 260 and back down to about 257 right now.
What'd you play at last year?
252.
So okay.
I got up there a good bit.
And still maintained your speed?
I think I'm faster than I was last year. So,
oh, wow.
I think I've trying to get some of that man strength going, too. I was still a pup, so only 23 years old, and trying to get some of that extra weight that comes with growing into my body a little bit.
It's his third year in the league.
Yeah.
He's talking about being a man. You can have a long career, man.
Yeah.
Do they enforce the weight? Do they give you a weight and say, or is it just as long as you're running? I mean, have you ever had somebody say, hey, maybe you need to drop weight and get a little more speed?
Nope. Not here. I know some places will do that. If it doesn't affect your play and it's helping me being at this heavier weight, then that's what we want.
Now I remember. So we were talking, the last couple of years were kind of a fog as far as talking to players.
Sure.
And we're looking at your picture, but there was something about Ichiro, wasn't
there? Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like you were a big fan growing up. You're a baseball player, right?
Yep. So I grew up playing baseball. We lived in Issaquah. My dad worked for WAMU back in the day. That's in right. Downtown. From I was 3 to 5 years old, and we would go to old Safeco Field and watch all the baseball games we could. So I grew up an Ichiro fan, who's my guy. Wore number 51 for every jersey. Played quarterback my 8th grade year wearing number 51. Not a great look.
That's awesome.
Not a great look, but always supported the Mariners, so. Excited for them and wish them best of luck, in the wild card.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. So the buses leave at 3:45. So I'm thinking, if I get there early and get on my phone and watch it on the app.
Yep.
Have you been watching the Mariners this year?
Yeah, I've been watching them a little bit. I gotta admit, I'm also a Dodgers fan because I grew up down there too.
Sure.
At least they don't have too much.
We'll worry about that when we get to the World Series.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then you're going to have to pick sides.
Yeah, AL and NL will be all right.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be forced into a decision.
Yeah.
So you grew up playing baseball. Were you a pitcher, an outfielder? What position did you play?
I pitched for a lot of it, and then I played outfield too.
Was that the initial dream? Like, I want to be a big league ball player?
Probably. Yeah, I started when I was 3 years old playing baseball.
Okay.
T-ball over here in Issaquah. And then it turned to football.
When did you stop playing?
My sophomore year of high school was my last year playing baseball.
And that's just because of football, or you lose your passion for it? Or
I was playing football, baseball, basketball in high school.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, about that time, people were starting to do it year-round, and I would show up late to basketball season because of football, show up late to baseball season because of basketball. And I just kind of had to reduce it slowly.
My baseball career ended because of loft, Bob.
Lack of bleeping talent.
Talent, yes. couldn't hit anything. Did you play hoops?
I did. I played in high school up through my junior year.
Yeah, just through your junior year. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, and so what other choices did you have besides Stanford when you were coming out?
I could have had my choice across the country, but I committed to Stanford my junior year, and I knew that's exactly where I wanted to go.
He knew that's where you went.
He's a wise man.
He wanted to follow in your footsteps, clearly.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Don't do that.
I committed 24 hours after I got offered from Stanford.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Oh,
okay.
That's cool.
So that was an easy choice.
Yeah. I was waiting on him.
Well, we appreciate you coming by, man. It's been fun to watch the tight ends and the offense so far. Hopefully that continues throughout the season, and we'll hopefully catch up with you again.
Absolutely. God bless, guys.
Thanks, Colby.
There you go. There's Colby Parkinson of your Seattle Seahawks getting set to take on the New Orleans Saints coming up this weekend. We're going to come back, talk about this Mariner team, and talk about strength on strength. What is going to win out in this matchup, Mariners pitching or Blue Jays offense? That's coming up next. It's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Colby Parkinson, who joined us in the previous segment. Our Seahawks player spotlight is presented by Mazda of Everett. He is a big dude, Dave.
Man,
it's a large man.
Incredible. It looks like he's put a lot of mass on, muscle mass, but... he's been a really nice surprise. I wasn't quite sure why they drafted him at the time that they did. And
was he a fourth rounder? I think so.
Yeah, and I just didn't think that was something that they needed, but they saw something in him, and he's really, like I said, I love the guys that aren't blockers. Like whenever I see Tyler Lockett blocking downfield, I love him for that, because that's not what he's built for.
Yeah,
but you see the desire. DK, of course, he's built for it, but so is Colby. I mean, that's a big strong dude there, and the tight end group is just, it's just been, I haven't even seen or heard from Fant yet, but the one thing about him, I think he's the one with the most catches. He's close. He's got 11. Disley has 12, but he was the leading reception receiver last year in Denver. So interesting to talk to him and see what that was like getting traded and everything.
Isn't that crazy? I think he's 23, and this is his third year in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's 23 years old.
Yeah, I pulled up his height and weight, and I was like, holy moly. This guy's a very, very young guy. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they are able to continually get these guys the ball. That 13 personnel grouping where it's one running back and three
tight ends
has really been cool to watch. They run a lot of good stuff off of that. Shane Waldron has a lot of different plays that kind of, one sets up the other.
I think what led to my personal angst about the tight ends not being used was watching how effective tight ends were against this team.
Yeah.
I felt like even when the Legion of Boom was here, didn't we talk about tight ends in like the middle of the field? There would just be these dead spots in the defense, and it was always a tight end that just seemed to be kicking the team's butt. Whether they were winning or losing was different, but just completing passes, crucial third down conversions, and it was always a tight end. And I'm thinking, boy, if only the Seahawks would throw to tight ends, that'd be weird.
Yeah, well, they when they had Zach Miller, I thought Zach Miller was maybe, I think Disley has taken over, but
was great.
I thought Zach Miller was like the complete tight end.
Remember how they used him though? Because he was a Pro Bowler for the Raiders.
Yeah.
He had like 50 some catches the year before, and then the line was so bad that year. He kind of became a de facto offensive lineman. Yeah, he certainly had games where he caught balls, but he was a remarkable blocker. I remember that.
He was a great play action guy too. I mean, he was the guy that would, I mean, you swore he was blocking.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he'd release into the pattern. So yeah, it's been nice. And I didn't really see what the deal was with Parkinson, but the way they're using him now, and he's just gotten better and more confident. It's really nice to see that they have that option for Geno.
By the way, we're going to talk about what wins out here between the Blue Jays offense and the Mariners pitching. Now, in talking to hearing Goldsmith, talking to Morosi, has it changed your feel at all about this matchup, or do you feel even more confident, less confident?
I feel more confident.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the pitching matchup is the one that you want. You'd rather have that than the offense. I feel like, like I was saying, I mean, I don't know, maybe it doesn't seem to be the same with pitchers, but I feel like as far as offense goes, you can, like I said, go 4-for-5 one night and the next night go 0-for-5.
Yeah.
Remember how Kevin Costner was talking about the difference between hitting, 250 or whatever, and he's like a C&I single.
Yeah.
And it's only like, 25 hits over a course of the, couple
the
months
season.
Or whatever. Yeah. And I feel like that's much more elusive, whereas good starting pitching, man, is – yeah, and that's the reason why everybody says, that's what wins football games or baseball games.
Pitching and defense.
Yep.
Yep. Defense and football. Pitching's not going to help you there, though, Dave.
Yeah, we got running game and defense and football. We got too many things going back and forth. But, yeah, let's get back to the Mariners, man. I'm so excited for this game tomorrow, and it's going to be – you know, it's going to be really cool to see how this matchup works out. We didn't get a chance to ask JP, but I'm just wondering as far as their bats versus our starting rotation, and namely, you know, either Robbie Ray, Logan Gilbert, and Castillo. Like, that's got to be one of the better matchups that you've got going. I mean, you know,
yeah, it feels like it. I mean, without paying a ton of attention to the National League, it certainly feels like it. And I'm just really curious, and Morosi was equally as intrigued by Scott's comments about, you know, Ray's going to be the starter in game two, but that could change depending on game one. I'm like, all right, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm anxious to see what that could mean, if hopefully Castillo has a dominant performance and maybe he's inspired to either have an incredibly short leash with Ray, or he just starts another power righty in Logan Gilbert and says, we're going with that, because that's just not what the Blue Jays do very well.
Yeah.
So we'll find out. But we'll talk more about this, obviously, with the voice of the Seattle Mariners, a man who loves to break this kind of stuff down. Aaron Goldsmith will join us next here as we continue. It's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.